Welcome back to Blair and Barker. So here's the thing before we're joined by Kevin Plar. Barker and I did Blue Jay Central this weekend, as some of you may know. And one of the hits I did, my tie wasn't straight. It was crooked. I would think, as my, you know, my partner over there, he would have said, hey, old man, your tie looks like you put it on drunk. I mean, I would have thought you would have done that. I mean, I would have done it for you.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I think you are a grown man. Why do you think on every single one of those hits that I did, I always said, can you show me before I do my hit?
I just thought because you liked looking at yourself.
No.
Oh.
Everything's got to be straight, in the right place. So, you know, it's 90% of that show's about how you look, right?
90. Anyhow, I was just a little disappointed.
You were?
I went home and saw it, and I thought, yeah.
I mean,
my boy should have said,
I can't do everything for you.
Tie.
I mean, I carried you for 2 days on that show. What do you mean, dude? Tie for you?
You carried me for 1 day.
Jeez.
One day. The other day, I was kind of.
Seriously.
Anyhow. We had a lot of fun. And I wanted to, the reason I mentioned it, because we had a lot of people come up to us. Tell us how much they liked the show and everything. And I really appreciated, we both really appreciated it. It was kind of cool. And it is the best seat in the stadium.
Jay's fans are excited, which is pretty cool too.
Yeah, that's what I said. I got the feeling that it was, I don't know, 2015 was something else, but you just, there was a buzz. Like, there was a buzz for the Yankees series, which I expected. And to me, that isn't necessarily an indication of how much of a buzz there is going to be in the ballpark. I mean, you got the Angels coming in. No disrespect to the Angels, but
you can beat them.
Yet it was still, it was a really cool experience. And it's kind of fun watching guys like Addison Barger, like just watching their reputation kind of be built in front of you. It's kind of neat being in the ground floor of that.
Winning's fun, Jeff.
It still is.
Yeah.
Boy, it's a perfect segue because our next guest is certainly no stranger to winning in Toronto. He's certainly no stranger in establishing himself and having a terrific major league career in Toronto. He announced his retirement from the game last week on Foul Territory, the podcast. We just had Eric Kratz, one of the hosts of that podcast on. We're very pleased to be joined by Kevin Plar. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us on Blair and Barker. Congratulations, man. I mean, you know, I think we had you on a little earlier in the year. 13 years, lots of great catches, lots of great baseball. But at the end of the day, I mean, you came back, you rehabbed from the thumb injury. At the end of the day, what kind of made you think that, okay, this is the time to make the decision?
I mean, first of all, thanks for having me again. Love talking to you guys.
Awesome.
To answer your question, at some point in the game, there is no other option. The options kind of just aren't there anymore. You know, when I was released from the Rangers, I went home, you know, had a chance to kind of reflect, see what I wanted to do, you know, see if any opportunities were out there. But I was kind of already prepared for the end. I mean, obviously, I wanted things to work out in Texas, and I wanted to go out on my own 2 feet. I wanted to have that kind of Steven Vogt fairy tale Derek Jeter ending to my career. But not all of us get a chance to say when it's time. And I got home, and I got to see the other part of life, the bigger part of life that I was missing, and you know, I was home with my wife and my kids, and my wife were expecting another one in early September. So thank you. So it was kind of an easier transition than I thought. You know, I gave it a little time to see what was out there, but you know, the Rangers opportunity was really the only opportunity, maybe aside from one or two other teams that I really, really wanted to play for, mostly just due to living here in Texas now. I had the opportunity to commute from home every day, allow my kids to stay in school, you know, kind of be as normal as a baseball player could be. Only me doing the traveling, not having my wife, you know, pack up and you know, move our family to spring training and then do another destination. And then by the time they get settled, the season's over and we got to go back home. So I was ready. I was prepared, you know, unlike maybe a lot of guys when they're told it's the end and they struggle with it a little bit. I was definitely prepared.
Kevin, I'm wondering, you know, you talked about you've got a growing family. How did you have the conversation with your wife about this? Or how did she, like, what was her role in this? Did she give you plenty of time to make the decision? Or could you kind of get a sense that, okay, there's, you know, my responsibilities kind of lay elsewhere?
I would say the bigger conversation was going into last season, mm-hmm. This season, going into spring training. I was pretty dead set on not playing until about December last year when I completed my rehab of my thumb injury. I started working out. I started kind of getting the itch again. I was like, damn, I know there's something I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm not really sure what else to do. And then that feeling kind of just stayed there for a long time, you know, kind of through December, through January. And then as we were getting really close to spring training, I didn't have a lot going for me. I was staying ready. I was staying in shape. And that's when my wife kind of, you know, played a big part in it. She told me to just do it already. I think those were exact words. And not just do it like retire, just do it, go play, because I'm tired of you pacing around the house. If you don't do this, you're going to regret not going back. You know, I still felt like I could play. I still felt like I had something to offer. And really, I think a big part of me wasn't ready to close that chapter in my life. So despite the end not being what I wanted it to be, I was very happy that I still went out. I went to spring training, could prove I could play. I had to go make a team. I made a team. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out. You know, part of it was me not performing well. Part of it, the Rangers really weren't performing well and needed to make some changes. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't the fairy tale ending I was hoping for my career. But I could sit here and say I have no regrets. I gave it everything I had. And, you know, despite having a not glorious ending to my career, I'm still happy I went back and really was able to officially close that chapter in my life.
Was it different joining a team that had won a World Series, you know, compared to some of the other teams that you were a member of? You know, because these guys had, obviously they'd played a long year together. They'd won a World Series. Did you find it kind of a different dynamic in not just in terms of the clubhouse, but just in general relationships and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, a lot of the same group of guys were there that won the World Series. So when you come into that environment, no matter who you are, you're always going to be a little bit of a outsider looking in on, you know, I can only imagine what the feeling was like of winning a World Series, the bond that you created with your teammates and your staff. And I can only speak on my experience of what it was like during our runs and in 15 and 16, what it was like that bond would never be broken. But the Rangers thing was just an interesting dynamic. They had just won the World Series and then they just came off a very disappointing year. So, you know, all signs were pointing towards, you know, last year was an anomaly. It was, you know, there was a lot of reasons for it. A lot of people, you know, talked about, you know, you won the World Series, you go on this, you know, tour of celebration, rightfully so. And then next thing you know, spring training's around the corner and you're like, crap, I haven't had my normal preparation, my normal off season. Everything's kind of thrown off. And once again, I can't speak on experience of what it's like winning. I know what it's like being close, and that kind of motivates you to want to win the whole thing, but I can only imagine winning the whole thing. There's definitely this hangover feeling going into the next season. That was clearly addressed in spring training, from Bochy, the front office down, that, okay, good, we got last year out of the way. We're now 2 years removed from the World Series. It's time to go out and prove ourselves again and, show what kind of team we're able to be. And, it wasn't from a lack of work and it wasn't from a lack of effort. It wasn't a lack of trying on their end. It just, sometimes you just can't catch a break. And that's what it kind of felt like there. It's like we tried a bunch of different things when I was there, different lineup configurations, different people getting playing time, making everyone have to go out and hit BP, show and goes. Like, everything was kind of explored, and you just felt like you were in every game, and it was just like you were just waiting for that one hit or that one inning to kind of turn it around. It just seems like they haven't been able to get it yet, although they are playing better baseball of now, and honestly, they're right in the thick of things. They're kind of a sleeping giant. They still haven't offensively played their best baseball, but, they're – when I looked, I think they were two or three or four games back of a wild card spot. So definitely a dangerous team looming, a team obviously that knows how to win, just a team still trying to find their way offensively.
Have you noticed when you sit down on your couch and watch a baseball game, you see it differently than when you were a player?
Oh, definitely. I wish I could sit here and like articulate to you what that feeling is. Obviously, you as a former player, you kind of know what that is. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to kind of figure out what that feeling is when I watch it. I think, obviously, I played on a lot of teams, so I have a lot of friends in the game still. I like to kind of channel surf and watch my friends. I like watching good matchups. I still watch the Ranger games a lot. My heart and, last team I played for was the Rangers, so I still am hoping for the best for them and wanting them to win. I guess I watch it from a less stressful lens.
Mm-hmm.
When I was an active player and I'd watch games on TV, I would envision myself being in the box and, a guy might strike out in a big situation and I'm like, man, I know that feeling. And then you start getting sweaty palms. Now I just get to watch it through the lens of a fan, maybe a high level fan that's got a lot of inside knowledge to the game. But I guess I find it a little bit more relaxing to watch. I usually have it on as a, whether I'm cooking or my kids are playing, I kind of just have it on in the background. And it's kind of like the same way I used to watch golf, I guess. Golf was always just kind of like a soothing thing to be on in the background. I never thought to like study it and be too inclined of trying to figure out how these professionals are able to do what they're doing. I think that's just kind of how I've learned to watch baseball, is just purely enjoyment.
You have a favorite player you watch? Like you tune in, oh, this guy's up. Hold on a second. Let me watch him. Do you have a favorite player?
I have some favorite players. Mostly like friends of mine that I play with. Talk about another team kind of underperforming and maybe still has one more run in them, I believe. The Braves. I like to watch Braves games. Matt Olson, Austin Riley, some of my closer friends in baseball. Yeah. I like to check in on how they're doing. Made a lot of good relationships with guys in Anaheim last year, or L.A., sorry. Don't get me in trouble for saying Anaheim. But L.A., the Angels, I made a lot of close relationships with some of those young guys, and I like seeing what they're doing and taking the next step to what kind of players I thought they could be. I guess that part of it maybe hasn't changed. And maybe that's something that switched in me later in my career as I started kind of watching the game. When you're not playing every day, you watch the game a little bit differently. I started kind of watching the game through a player development, coaching mentality, and I think that helped me kind of help guys maybe try to be the best version of themselves, what they need to work on, how they need to grow. So I do watch the game with that kind of lens still.
Okay, experiences being on a good team come trade deadline. Sort of around that week, there's 20 games left, about that 20-game mark before that sort of big day of, the GM's going to sort of either make it or break it. He's going to go out and get the big name. Can you feel a different buzz? Is there a different topic of conversation? Is there rumblings around of we need this guy, we need that guy? I hope he goes out and gets a couple of those dudes. Like, is there just a different feel? We better win this amount of games for him to go out and do this. Is there sort of that topic? How is that this time of the year?
Yes, to all those things. I think players, through their own fault, think they're a general manager of this team. And some players are a little bit more inclined to actually have those conversations with the GM. A GM plays a big part in it, too. I personally don't have a personal relationship with Ross, like I did with maybe an Alex Anthopoulos, where, you know, he would come in and talk to players about, hey, we're thinking about getting X, Y, and Z. How do you think he would fit the clubhouse? You know, he wouldn't tell you who he's given up or stuff like that, but he would have to be kind of on the, let's call it the goal line for him to come to you with something like that. But it was very important to get players' feedback in terms of how does he fit the culture. We need X, Y, and Z, but this guy we believe can fit. Some GMs will do that, but players are always talking about it. Players, for the most part, know what their team needs to compete, but there's definitely a different feel this time of year. You know you're getting close to the trade deadline. You want to put your team in a position where you feel like the organization is going to add and give your team the best opportunity to win. With that being said, in 2014, I was a part-time player. I was kind of up and down during that year. We had a pretty good run right around the All-Star break. I think we were a couple games back of the division, and the front office decided not to do anything. And it was kind of a kick in the groin. You know, you felt like you put your team in a position. You want your team, you want your GM, your ownership group to believe in the group of guys that are there and feel like you got a real chance to win it and to go out and improve that team. It gives you the shot in the arm. And then you fast forward a year later in 2015, it was like any sort of prospect or any sort of someone we might have, we are going out and trying to improve this team because we feel like it's a shot. We have a shot to win this thing, and it's a huge shot of adrenaline in the arm. You talk about August being probably the hardest month of the year, being the dog days of summer. Adding to your roster that's already really good and competing and only getting better, you know, gives you that little extra motivation you need to get through August.
I just think it's funny. Sorry, Jeff, but we had Kratzy on. He was talking about chemistry and overachieving. It's sort of like the Blue Jays, right, where, you know, it's a bunch of names that we didn't expect to be doing what they're doing. They are doing it. They're in first place. And Kratzy was saying, you got to give up somebody who's got you here to bring in somebody that makes your team better. There's a fine line. It's just not as easy as a GM going, well, that dude's way better than the dude we already got, but that dude's doing a lot for our team, and we're winning games, and we're in first place. Sort of what you're talking about. It's just that sort of, boy, if you don't make the right call, you're kind of in trouble. I don't think it's just as easy as going, well, we go out and get X, Y, and Z. It's going to make us better because they're big names and they've been there and done it before. I just think it's cool listening to Kratzy and now you talk because you both have been there and done it before. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, overachieving players is a very kind of scary thing unless you truly believe that player is going to maintain that over the long haul. But team chemistry is real. It's not nearly talked about as much as some of the other things because it's not quantifiable. You can't add it up. You can't see it on a spreadsheet. You don't see it in sabermetrics. You don't see it in analytics. But team chemistry is real, and that's what makes a GM's decision at a trade line deadline very tough. It's hard to sell team chemistry to a fan base when you have a first-place team, although anyone that's been inside those walls know how important it is to – really like the guy next to you, to want to fight for the guy next to you, to want to win with the guy next to you, that because you're in that environment, your game is constantly being elevated. So it's a tough job for a GM, but when you have an opportunity to go out and make your team better because the player you're bringing in is just flat out better than a player you have, it's also trying to find the right player that also isn't going to come in and, you know, subtract from what you have, but is only going to add to the culture, the chemistry, the vibe that your team has created, your organization has created. So it's definitely a challenging thing any GM has to go through, but it beats the alternative of being a GM this time of year, thinking about how many guys you're going to get rid of on your team and how you're going to kind of rebuild a farm system.
Here, here.
If I was a GM, I would like to be in the other position, knowing that my team is a legitimate contender, and I have an opportunity to put this team over the top and do something franchise hasn't done in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Kevin, listen, we really appreciate your time today. The only thing that gives me more pleasure than saying I watched you play was that I was also able to talk to you. And, you know, enjoy retirement, enjoy your family, and just thanks so much, man.
Thanks for coming on, Kevin.
Thanks for everything.
We appreciate it.
We'll be up there. I'll be up there soon. I'll be doing a couple games this year, getting my feet wet.
Excellent.
It's something I want to do in a retirement. So look forward to seeing you guys up there when I'm in Toronto next month. And look forward to getting together.
Okay, see you, buddy.
Be well, Kevin.
Thanks.
All right. Take care, guys.
Kevin Pillar, former Major League outfielder.
Yeah.
He was he was fun to watch play.
The chemistry thing, Jeff. I mean, that's interesting. We've had two dudes on talk about that.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing you have to remember. Especially in a good team.
Yeah.
Most of the time, you're not giving a guy up off that team.
Before you finish it, do you think the Jays are overachieving?
Yes.
Then you
and
would,
you know what
you
I'm
going to
say? And you know why I'm going to say it? And people are going to light up the phone lines. Their run differential would suggest to me that they are overachieving.
Well, chemistry matters then. How do you not screw that up?
No.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing where I kind of disagree. Most of the trades a good team makes at this time of the year, they're not giving up somebody off their 25-man roster. You're giving up somebody out of your minor league system. Now, having said that, the guy you're getting in is going to take somebody's place. So that's where it gets problematic.
If I had to give up Ernie Clement to get a number two, that would screw up the chemistry.
You're not going to get
him. I'm not saying just him, but I'm saying if he's the final piece.
You're not going to get him. No. I mean, no. It's what we would be talking about is, I mean, if you're looking at adding a pitcher, you know, you might be talking about moving a guy from the minor leagues and maybe Jonathan Class A or maybe Alan Roden or somebody like that. Like Ernie Clement, the only way you're trading Ernie Clement is if you're getting a legitimate third baseman in return or somebody. Ernie Clement's an everyday player for you. So you've got to be getting another everyday player in return. And if you're going to get that other everyday player in return, Ernie's not going to, like, if you trade Ernie for pitching, you got to replace Ernie.
Mm.
And Varsho and Santander are coming back. Do either of them replace Ernie? Well, maybe Barger goes to third base and, you know, Santander's in the outfield. But I get what you're saying if it means subtracting somebody from the major league roster. Like, you look at Alex's deal for David Price, Troy Tulowitzki. Big personalities, too.
Sure.
Like, not just great players. Mm-hmm. Huge personalities.
Yeah.
Look at the personalities in the clubhouse at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Batista.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie.
Donaldson.
Mm-hmm. Pilar was a big personality in his own way.
Bigger, yeah.
Marcus Stroman.
Mm-hmm.
Russ Martin. Like, you're talking
alpha male.
There's that's like testosterone capital, right? I also think that gets to the most interesting thing Kevin said about Alex coming down and saying, look, how would this impact if we added this guy without saying who's going to be traded?
Yeah, it's
now, the other thing, of course, Alex didn't trade. Alex just traded prospects, right? He traded Jeff Hoffman. Who did they give up for Tulowitzki? They gave up Hoffman for Tulowitzki. I'm trying to think for Price. Matt Boyd. Thank you, Matt Boyd. So I think that's what you would be looking at with the Blue Jays. And the trickle-down effect would be maybe fewer at-bats for Davis Schneider.
Yeah.
Maybe fewer at-bats for...
Fewer starts for Max.
Yes.
Fewer high-leverage innings for Garcia or Hoffman.
That, to me, after what we talked about earlier...
That's and I what was rethinking and Pilar are talking
that,
about.
That might be the one, because I know I talked about that getting Class A, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought, okay, the... the major impact might be there, might be in the bullpen.
Max is
enough of.
He's a big voice. He's an alpha male.
Yeah, but Max also, I think,
does he?
I don't think Max is going to stand in the way of a team getting better to win a World Series.
But I think he wants to be a part of it. If he's doing all this work to be healthy, that's all I'm saying. The two dudes we just had on have brought up an interesting conversation, and it's not going to always, be the easiest of sales.
I'm also going to say this, too, because it really is true. As Dan Shulman says, and other people said, it is remarkable how often that takes care of itself. Somebody gets hurt. Like, it's just, this is why when we have trade talks this early, I always say this is fun and games, and everybody likes trades. There's 3 weeks of baseball or 2.5 weeks of baseball left to be played.
20 games.
20 games left to be played. So.
Again, they're a good team. There's 16 games over 500.
Yeah.
You got to be thinking about it now. You got to be thinking about how do you sell it. If I bring this guy in, how do I sell it to the dudes that are already here who have thrown their arms completely off for us to put us in this spot?
Do we have time to do the trivia right now, folks?
Make it.
Down
Make
the
time.
Line? Going once, going twice. Let's do it. Let's do the trivia question now. David Sampson's going to join us. I'll make it fast. We've been giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question of 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Our last question and answer was, he's a three-time All-Star, three-time Gold Glove winner with the Jays, played exclusively in the American League for his entire career, including a stint with the Angels. The Jays traded him away for two position players, one of which never played a game at the franchise. The answer is Vernon Wells. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Giants at the Rogers Center on July 18th. That's going to be a game. And it's a great trivia question. He's a four-time Gold Glove winner who played 13 seasons in the majors, spent one season in Toronto, ended his playing career as a Giant in 2006. After he was finished playing, he became the first manager in MLB history to guide his team to the playoffs in his first four seasons. He has managed in both the AL and NL, both in the same state. Again, good one. A four-time Gold Glove winner who played 13 seasons in the majors, spent one season in Toronto, ended his playing career as a Giant in 2006. After his playing days, he became the first manager in MLB history to guide his team to the playoffs in his first four full seasons. He has managed in both the AL and the NL, both in the same state. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Let's take a break and come back with David Sampson. It's Blair and Barker on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker, the first place in the American League edition of Blair and Barker.
There it is. You can't even get it out. You don't believe, Jeff.
I'm a believer.
You don't.
I'm a believer. Let's see if our next guest is a believer. David Sampson, of host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. There he is. You a believer in the Jays, Mr. Sampson?
Can we please talk at the end of this week? I don't think people realize this is a critical week. The best teams beat the worst teams, and you've got three, if I did my math right, three against the White Sox, three against the Aths.
Yes.
Which gives you an opportunity at 4-2 to me is the minimum. I'm looking for 5-1, and I'm hoping for 6-0.
Wow. On the road. You know they stink on the road.
You have to do it. This is where you have to make hay. Because the thing is, just getting to first place, and I'm a believer. I'm going full Mickey Dolenz. Love it. All in. That's an old reference. God dang it. That's so old.
That's great. You know, can I just jump in for a minute? Because we have a mutual friend, PJ Loiello. PJ and I drank at a bar beside Mickey Dolenz. You can ask PJ about it sometime. Sitting right next to us.
What was he drinking?
I don't believe it was. I think it was like a soda. He was with somebody else. I don't think he was having an alcoholic beverage. It was like a soda, but he was beside us.
It's not really an epic story.
Not really either. I don't. Do you care?
Do you want me to tell you who was with him?
Yeah.
Do you want me to tell you who was with him? That's more interesting. Not telling you who was with him.
Oh, boo.
Anyhow, he's a singer with them. He was with the Monkees, a band, because you're right.
Run differential. Do you care about it? Jace is plus 12. Does that matter to you? First place.
I guess what I want to say is this, that if you're going to start a story when we're trying to talk about first place Jays baseball and you're not going to tell us who he was with, frankly, you're the host of the darn show.
Yeah, I cannot reveal the identity of the individual
you're
beside
terrible
is it PJ's
host.
Wife?
No. I was going to say neither the identity nor the age of the person beside me. So that was beside him. So anyhow,
that's
all you need to know.
Jeez.
Anyhow, continue.
I forgot what I said.
About run differential.
Run differential. Do you care? Plus 12.
So I care greatly about run differential as long as it tells the story that I want to tell. So here's the situation when you're the Blue Jays. You're looking at the run differential and you're saying, well, I'm not sure that we deserve to have the record we have with that low run differential because that generally would have you, let's say you're plus 12, you're thinking about 2-3 over. That's generally what that would be. But there, every year there's going to be an exception where you'll have a team that has a decent run differential and a bad record, or the other way around, which is where the Jays are, which is why I started this pre-Monkees by saying that I want to see how this week goes because you can't be satisfied. You got to go full Alexander Hamilton, and you have to rock this week because you then go into the All-Star break. And what's exciting about that is that's not the halfway point. So it's not what I say is pre-break and post-break. Post-break is a shorter number of games. We're past the halfway pole, and we're about 2 weeks shy of the trade deadline when the deadline is over, when the All-Star break is over, which is why you want to show your front office. You want to say, all right, we made it. We saved the season. We're in first place. We just did a 5-1 week against two of the worst teams in baseball. Bring it to me. Give me the reinforcements because post-break, we start burying the competition.
Wow.
How do you, as an ownership group or a management team, answer the question about overachieving? How do you look at your team and you go, I mean, we've had...
Plus 12.
We've had horseshoes coming out of our ass for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And...
Didn't know that dude if you fell on him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How do you take that into account as a management group?
So just so you know, I have a ring that is full of horseshoes. If you ask the players from 2003, they will say everything went right. Every ridiculous decision by Jack McKeon, who I love forever, every decision that had the players saying, are you kidding me? And it worked almost every time. And when you get on that sort of run, it's best to help your team and then stay out of the way and just say that you're going to have a ride. Here's the part where we have a show that we do together after the season. Let's say the Jays win the pennant. Mm-hmm. Let's say they win the World Series. Whatever they do, you've got to really make sure you understand what your year was because we misunderstood our year and we chased Amy every year after that thinking, oh, we can do that again. We've got the players. But it was that moment in time that was ringworthy. It was not a dynasty. It was not built for long-term success, even though we tried to run it back as best as we could. So the evaluation process this offseason will be extremely critical.
Is it harder to evaluate coming close or harder to evaluate winning? Because one of the teams, we had Eric Kratz on, one of the teams we were talking about are the Arizona Diamondbacks, wondering what they're going to do at the trade deadline. Didn't win a World Series, but came close. Is it harder to analyze almost did it or did it?
Well, it stinks to get to. So here's the deal. What you do is when you have a team that had a great run, they get so close. You look at the team, you look at the contracts, you look at your payroll, and you say to yourself, can we squeeze one more year out of this? Do we get ownership approval to run it back with maybe a few additions and not terrible subtractions? When you win it, then you're done because all you want to do is win it again. And you say to yourself, back-to-back would put us in company that has not been enjoyed since the Yankees at the beginning of the century, 98, 99, 2000. And that's what teams are trying to do. Look what the Dodgers did. They, believe me, the Dodgers, what they care about only is getting back-to-backs and getting it done this year. So I'm very interested to see what happens with the Blue Jays, which, here's the through thread, this week matters. The game tonight, starting the week, it matters so much.
Were you ever scared of screwing up chemistry? Overachievers, there's chemistry. I got to go out and get better players. You know, maybe I should go down and talk to the veteran guys. Would it be okay if I bring this guy in? If I brought this guy in, is the clubhouse going to be okay? Are we all going to go buddy-buddy, go get drinks with Jeff Blair, hang out and have a good time? We can win
this
sucker.
Definitely not
going to do that. Is that a problem? Do you ever think about that as a front office?
Yeah, you don't want to bring ants to the picnic, but on the other hand, you don't need the players to be friends. Our players loved winning together, and they had great chemistry for 3 hours and 45 minutes a night for those 162 games. But at the end of the day, I would say we were 25 guys and 22 cabs, and I was fine with that because I wanted them to play well together and to fight for each other and to do the little things you need to do to win games. You do not have to like everyone you work with in order to succeed. I mean, my God, look at the two of you.
Yeah, that's
When's
a
the
great
last time
point.
You guys went out and got drinks?
Never. I can't stand him.
Well, and look at how great your show is.
Oh, it's the greatest show ever.
It is tremendous. Remarkable. It's like we're like an old arguing couple. It really is.
He's
but
always
it works,
wrong.
So that's the point.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that you don't socialize or go out as couples or just the two of you take guys trips. No one cares. They want the chemistry for the hours that the red light is on. And that was the view of the clubhouse. We want the chemistry when first pitch, 7.05 p.m., you will fight for each other as though you love each other. And if you all want to leave the park separately and do nothing, we tried fun things. Like we brought the team to Vegas on a road trip. We stopped
There's a good
in Vegas.
One.
We spent a bunch of hours together hanging out, and I will never forget Juan Pierre spent the entire time in his room because he didn't gamble, and he just, you know, it was like a layover.
Yeah.
And we got rooms for everyone, and a bunch of guys gambled and hung out or did whatever guys do, trying to create sort of fun. And at the end of the day, it didn't matter.
Boy, there's no computer for that. I was just wondering, right? I mean, everything a front office tries to do is plug it into a computer. But you can't do that with chemistry. Like, you just got to have that feel. How do I not screw this up and stay out of it? That's where the Jays are at.
I want the Blue Jays. Hey, listen, I want the Blue Jays to think Braves. This is what I'm going to be preaching from now till July 31st when the Braves won the World Series and they brought in Duval and Rosario and Soler. We crushed them. That's the worst trade deadline I've ever seen. And meanwhile, they rode it through October. I'm not looking for a splash for the Jays. I want incremental progress at positions of need. Now, for me, with the Blue Jays, it's always going to be clear what I'm going to want. I'm going to want to add both a starter and a bullpen arm. I want to fortify it so much that it's locked down, that we get an early lead and we ride it, because that's how you win playoff games. Yeah. Early lead and then be untouchable. Shorten the game, and that should be a focus at the deadline for the Blue Jays.
You got me fired up. I tell you what.
And that's a hard thing to do.
You want to go get drinks later?
Not really, but I would want to play for you, okay? That's awesome. I'm in one of those 22 caps.
I mean,
okay.
And if you're going to go drinking with Kevin, make sure you bring your wallet.
Well, you have to. I don't pay for nothing.
That's true. He's a former player. He doesn't pay for anything,
Minor
right?
leaguer.
Free?
Minor leaguer. Okay.
So I couldn't be happier to buy drinks and buy food for players when I see them on the road or when I happen to be, you know, of course there's rules. The hotel bar, that's front office. Don't go to the hotel bar if you're a player.
Yeah.
But if I see them out and about or they're standing in line to get the gyro in New York outside the Hilton, I'll pay for it unless they didn't play well, in which case I'll go up to them, pat them on the tuchus and say, it's on you tonight.
I got to ask you about this the Brian Reynolds no trade list.
Uh-oh.
Because I need this explained to me. And Brian Reynolds no trade. I get, okay, the Blue Jays are on it. The Blue Jays are on a lot of players' trade list. Dodgers, Padres, Giants, Yankees, Mets. So, three of them in California.
All the best teams.
All the best teams,
yeah.
Basically. Now, and the reason I'm asking you this is how much do no trade lists. How much are they other than a bargaining chip? Because if I'm not mistaken, I've pointed this out, Troy Tulowitzki had Toronto on his no-trade list. Troy Gloss had Toronto on his no-trade list. Scott Rowland did. Lo and behold, all three of them played in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Does a no-trade list matter at all?
Well, it matters greatly. When you negotiate to have a no-trade clause to a certain number of teams, you have to submit it on time, and you have to then choose the best teams. Why? Because you want to choose buyers. Why? Because what you want to do is say, oh, I'm not going to go to you. Oh, can you tack on a year or two at an AAV that would increase the cash that's guaranteed? Then I'll waive my no-trade clause to go to you. So the smartest players with the best agents always choose not based on state tax, not based on what time zone it is. They base it, if they're smart, on the best teams who would be looking for that particular position and use it as leverage to gain more guaranteed money.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I would have a no-trade clause, but nobody let me. So I never had one.
That's He's got one here.
I can't be traded here. That's because nobody else wants me. I mean, that's
where
we're
at. You have to be wanted to have a no-trade clause.
There it is. I got to ask you about the Nationals. Why are they firing everybody all of a sudden?
The Nationals are an interesting group. So Ted Lerner, when he passed away, and I went into great detail on today's Nothing Personal, but let me sum it up for you and for the audience here who may not have heard today's show, which you can hear every day at 7 a.m. on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. Thank you for that. I would say this. Ted Lerner, when he passed away, there was not unanimity amongst the children. Do we stay or do we go? They did a full clash. As opposed to the Irsay children, all of whom knew the plan. They knew what their positions were going to be, and it was smooth sailing. For the Lerners, it has been bumpy. And the reason the team is off the market is they didn't get the price that all the kids agreed they would want. Sort of like the Buss family. Hey, $10 billion, all of a sudden, we're not fighting anymore. Mm-hmm. We are in like Flynn. It's not happening with the Nationals. They're not getting that sort of crazy number. There is a date this month where they had to pick up the option on Rizzo and Martinez. And they didn't want to pick up the option because why saddle a team with an extra year when you hope to have an owner? Even though they're claiming the team's not for sale, which it is, you want to give an owner a carrot, a new owner saying, look, it's a blank canvas. Whatever you want, we've got great young players. Look, they were just named All-Stars. We fired the guy who traded for the All-Stars, but you can come in and you do with it as you please. And we'd like an extra $100 to $200 million for that right.
The timing with the draft is a non-issue, right?
That is such a ridiculous thing that people are saying today. If the Nationals had the 7th pick, let's have this conversation. They've got the 1st pick. Their draft board is done. It is in stone. They've negotiated with whoever they're taking. They've figured out the allocation of their slot money and their overall pool money already with the player they have their eyes on. There's nothing. It's not like, oh, they're on the clock. Who are we going to draft? Give me a break. Secondly, the draft is really the scouting director, your VP of scouting. He's the one, she or they, are in charge of the room. It's not the president of baseball operations or the GM. It's your head of scouting, and that head of scouting is still there. And by the way, the 1st pick's already been decided.
So Rizzo didn't say, if he goes, I go.
Interesting. I've had that happen, and that doesn't work well with me. If you fire that guy, then I'm going to quit. Okay. Like right now? Just can you do it like before the next pay period? Like what's your leverage here? Do you think Mike Rizzo would die on the vine for Davey Martinez or the other way around? I can't imagine. Yeah. You don't see that often. You more often see GMs and managers who really aren't on the same page, and you try to get them on the same page. And if you can't, then there's a split, and you have to choose one side if you're the president of a team. But for Mike Rizzo, after all these years, to say it's either Davey Martinez or I walk away, I don't think that's what happened. I think that Rizzo knew that his days were numbered. And I feel terribly for the Nats. They never got a chance to defend their 2019 title. COVID came. They just did not get the increased revenue that normally a World Series winner would get. They didn't get the bump. They didn't get to use it. And they had to do a rebuild immediately. And it's tough.
Yeah.
More irreplaceable, manager or general manager, most of the time?
General manager.
Really?
And with all due respect to managers, because I love all the 24 of them that I had. It's really, you work with the GM.
24?
Well, I made that number.
You made that number up.
It sounds like
20.
No, it's day what I said earlier about working for you.
Wait a minute. All you got to do
is 24 is a lot.
I have a pretty simple rule, and it works pretty well.
When?
All you got to do is everything I want you to do have it be your idea.
Yeah.
Perfect sense. I'm the boss.
Why not?
David, thanks for doing this as always. Awesome. Great stuff.
You're great, man.
Be well.
See you. See you later.
Take care. The great David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal, the podcast. And yes, 7 a.m., check it out. And
it's he the does best.
It's very good.
It's awesome.
Well, I mean, get a guy who's hired and fired people in one World Series, rings and torn teams apart and built teams. It's pretty.
He's done everything in baseball.
Cool. So there we are. I mean, today's show might as well be headlined chemistry because it seems like we spent a lot of time. Barker's not a believer in chemistry.
David said there's 22 different cabs.
Usually Barker would say chemistry is a hockey thing.
No, that's you, because I've never played hockey and I've never been in a hockey room, so I have no idea how to speak to that. I think if my players are way better than your players, most of the time I'm going to beat you.
But David is right about the sort of the whole close team things. Like I'm thinking of the teams I covered that were really good. Like really, really good teams and how close they were. The 94 Expos, they were young. They were a bunch of young guys and they were just kind of close because they sort of almost had to be. I'd never been able to really put a handle on chemistry in baseball just because it's the most individual of team sports. Mm. I can go 4-for-4. I can have the best day of my career.
Yeah.
And we could lose 12-0.
Wow.
Right?
So you're telling me if George Springer stunk all year, we wouldn't have to have this conversation anyway. Because basically, without him, they're not in first place. It sort of feeds off of one guy getting smoking hot, staying hot for a long time, and everybody's sort of feeding off that.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's where it gets.
John can move around the lineup.
That's where it gets a little.
You can bunt.
That's where it gets a little different. I mean, only because George has been here for a while, and you're dealing with personalities. I just the whole overachieving thing intrigued me because I just don't know.
I'm sure they don't either.
I don't know how you, and I'm not saying that to be an ass. I just don't know how you judge it. You've had a whole bunch of stuff go your way.
You're missing the other team's best starters a lot.
Yeah.
And when you do face them, you beat them a lot.
But that's the thing.
It's
not just, like, I don't want to make this sound. This is not just a matter of luck because.
They've earned it.
Oh, they've earned it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. You know what? I know a lot of weird stuff happened when the Yankees were in town, but you don't sweep the Yankees by luck.
Not four games. Mm-mm.
But boy, I'll tell you, it's it was interesting hearing David talk about this week. I'll ask you this. Jays go 3-3. I don't think they will, but if they go 3-3 this week, does this just let that whole road thing fester? See, this is where I think if they were to go 5-1 in this road trip.
Oh, you cooking with gravy now.
Now maybe that whole road thing.
Well, I don't think the road thing has anything to do with who they're playing. I think it's about routines don't travel.
But what I'm saying is, that's right.
That's what it is.
But I'm saying if they go 5-1, even though they're playing two crap teams, it's still going to be 5-1 on the road.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter whether you're playing.
They're dancing in there. It's dancing.
See, I just think
from the loins of experience.
The loins of experience. I've got to contemplate this whole road thing because I just don't think it's. I understand pitchers having difficulty. I just think the whole team stops hitting as a whole on the road.
As anybody, I could talk myself into, as a baseball player, anything. If I think I stink on the road because my uniform smells different, then I ain't going to get no hits, Jeff.
Ow!
Don't even put me in the lineup, coach.
And with that image, we say goodbye for another edition of Blair and Barker. We'll be doing Blue Jays Talk tonight. See, I started the show with Blue Jays Talk. I'm going to end it with Blue Jays Talk. We'll be doing that tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the baseball. Enjoy the rest of your day.